Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Brendan, thank you for taking the time to hop on.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to. I'm with you, though. I'm sad to see the season end, but at least it was a really appropriate ending with clearly the two best teams in the country actually squaring off. Like, how often do we get that?
Yeah, and then we saw the best team in the nation just run them out the gym again. I guess only this time by only 15 points, but smacked them nonetheless. The article that you released in The Athletic pretty much detailed how the heck we got here. When you look at all the research you've done from UConn jumping into the Big East to the coaches, what stands out to you? Like, what is the big difference between UConn and some of these other schools like Kentucky that have been, like, reaching for success?
Yeah, I still think it's hard. I don't think there's a singular answer to that. I mean, first and foremost, it's hiring two, you know, certainly one Hall of Fame coach and what is looking like a second Hall of Fame coach. But it's identifying talent. I mean, you can go all the way back to, you know, when Jim Calhoun got his start at UConn, and they weren't exactly rolling out of the gate, but they made progress. You talk to people who were around back then, and the first time they made the NIT under Calhoun, there was definitely a general feeling like they might have something kind of going over there. And then next thing you know, you get Donyell Marshall, you get Rip Hamilton, and, you know, it's players at the end of the day, and UConn gets guys. And one of the points I made in the story is that in the time that I've spent up in stores in the past and just being around the program, you always hear people say this notion that, like, stores is so isolated that when players go there, they only focus on basketball. And that's one of the reasons that they're really good. Now, there's plenty of isolated basketball programs out there that do not turn into perennial national champions. What I think is, like, it separates UConn in that regard, or how it uses that aspect of its identity, is that not only is it isolated, but it's a place that has coaches who can recruit and identify elite dudes. And they not only get them, but then they find guys that are willing to go to stores. So it's not just finding players and sticking them in the middle of the woods. It's finding great players who are willing to be in the middle of the woods. And those are the guys who, probably not surprisingly, are, you know, going to be the hardest workers and going to be guys who get every ounce out of their potential. And that's really what, I mean, UConn has been for a long time, I think.
Brendan Quinn is here with us from The Athletic. One point in your article as well is about the early relationship, and I guess one of the early meetings between Coach Hurley and Coach Calhoun, and that there was a point in time, despite the success that he's had over the past couple of years and what he's built to, that their initial interaction when he ran a practice was one that, you know, Coach Hurley didn't think that he belonged at UConn. Can you talk about that and where that relationship was and is? And I know this is a story that he told last night after the victory.
Yeah, I'd heard a version of this, like, back in the day when I spent a while up there in December of last season, and I think I might have heard a version of the story. But yeah, he expanded on it last night, and it was essentially, you know, after he took the job in 2018, he had a really successful tenure at Rhode Island. He had most of a really good roster coming back. This was pre-transfer portal, so those guys were pretty much coming back. He could be sure of it. And, you know, he took the UConn job because who turns down UConn? You know, at that time, they had 4 national titles in the last 20 years. still kind of a major brand in college basketball, but at the same time, it was not playing in the Big East, and it was not playing to the standard of UConn, and the roster that he inherited from Kevin Ollie just wasn't very good. There were some kind of just like structural issues of the actual program. And so long story short, you know, Dan has his first practice and he says, what the hell is this? Like, this is not UConn basketball. Like, what did I sign up for? And, you know, in his own words last night, he had some buyer's remorse immediately. And he really kind of, panicked. And I think anyone who has followed Dan and sees his quirks and his idiosyncrasies and his just kind of emotional voltage, yeah, he kind of panicked. And he went as far as asking his agent if he could back out of the deal that he signed at UConn and return to Rhode Island. But that contract, of course, included a buyout. So, you know, the agent explained to Dan what a buyout is, and Dan realized he was kind of stuck. So his next recourse was to go to Jim Calhoun's office, who was kind of working as a retiree in one of those, like, statesman fundraiser type roles for the university. Dan walks into his office and says, you know, what's going on with this place? What's wrong with this? This isn't UConn, et cetera, et cetera. And Jim Calhoun responded in a way that I think most of us would expect Jim Calhoun to respond. He ripped into him. He laid into him and he said, maybe you're not the guy that we should have hired for the job. Like, don't you ever come in here and speak to me this way. They just left it at this, extremely tense moment. And Dan ended up leaving the room. This wasn't in the story, but he went and met with the athletic director after that and said, you know, we got to get this thing together. And it all just kind of started building from there. Obviously, the biggest thing they needed to do was get back to the Big East, and they did that. So that's good.
Well, we see the success that he and the program have been able to have. We certainly hear from him. He reminds us about that this is a second version of the team. Uh-huh. What are your thoughts on a third version? I mean, are we that far along? Is a three-peat a possibility, or is it just almost like, I don't want to say impossible, nothing's impossible, but is it a long shot?
I wouldn't say it's a long shot. They're going to be probably a preseason top five team. They are going to be a, you know, prime destination. I think right now it is a primary destination for guys who want to be coached. And that's a hell of a selling point. So, you know, if you're not only getting good players and some pros, but you're getting guys who are willing to go in and play a role, which has been very much the defining aspect of these two championship teams that Dan and the UConn staff, which his staff, I don't think can get enough credit for what they do. But, you know, they compile talent that fits together and personalities that are willing to play their role. You know, we talked about this team this year. You forget, you know, last year's team, Andre Jackson, Jordan Hawkins, Adama Sanogo, like those were guys who all had options before that year. Hawkins could have gone pro. Jackson could have gone pro. Sanogo could have gone pro. And they all came back and they played their roles. And the guys around them fit into their roles, from Klingon coming off the bench as a freshman. Like, how crazy is it that Klingon came off the bench as a freshman? You watch him now, you know, he's the best player on the court 99 out of 100 times this season. Tristan Newton he won the Cousy Award this year. Last year, he was the fifth option on the team, sixth option on the team. Alex Carabin, same thing. So if they can replicate that and bring in guys who do that and are all willing to score, you know, 12 to 14 points a game and just win, why not? Why can't they win a third?
Brendan Quinn is here with us from The Athletic. As we start to wrap things up, I mean, outside of UCLA, people automatically, having more recent times, just automatically think about Duke. I don't know if it's a matter of nostalgia or what the case is, but when you look at UConn, Are they not the cream of the crop? Are they not at the top of the mountain over the past, I don't know, even 40, 45, maybe 50 years?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a 30-year window, without question, because what's been really interesting is there's been other programs who've kind of popped up as potential candidates, right, to join that group of, you know, I'm just talking the last quarter century, you know, kind of get up there with Carolina and Duke and Kansas, et cetera. You know, Villanova wins back-to-back, or I'm sorry, Villanova wins two titles in 3 years, and three titles total. Florida goes back-to-back, but you start to see those are kind of the products of coaches or individual collections of talent, right? The crazy thing about UConn is that it's six titles from six vastly different teams from three different head coaches playing out of two different leagues. Like, that's, in my opinion, more impressive than going back-to-back the last 2 years. The fact that these six titles in 25 years have come under such different circumstances. That's where you start wondering, like, is there pixie dust up there, or is there something in the water in stores? Like, what is it? But I'm with you. I don't think that it's like, oh, there's this group of blue bloods. Like, right now, UConn stands alone.
Yeah.
And that, especially because you hear Dan Hurley talk last night when, like, even the conversation of Kentucky came up, and he, like, of taking the Kentucky opening, I should clarify. And it was like he was so aghast at even the suggestion, like, that he's not going anywhere. Like, they're already planning next year's roster, and if he's approaching this like that, they're just going to keep on rolling. So I think they're in a class of their own right now. They are the envy of everyone else. I think the most interesting dynamic, though, is that in a world that is being defined by football and conference realignment, it is still a, you know, non-football school. Yes, they have a team, but we all know that UConn is not a football school. You know, they're oddly, like, not positioned for conference realignment because the basketball program is so tied to the Big East identity, you know? So, like, if you go to the Big 12 for football money and now your basketball team's in there, like, does it work? It could, but I don't know. Like, the school needs more money for sure, and the money is in the football leagues. And the school's not in a football league. So, you know, what happens to UConn in the next 5 years is a fascinating case study in the power structure of collegiate athletics right now.
Hey, Brendan, it is so wild. I've never heard that. I mean, out of all the conversations that we've had, everything that you could have turned on the television or radio or heard or read, really, if there's anything that could be or put a dent into what UConn has done, the fact that it could be football and all of the, I don't want to say, how can I say this? All the disruption that currently exists on the football side could also disrupt what's going on the basketball side for UConn. That's some wild stuff. I'm going to look into that. Hey, Brendan, thank you for taking the time to join us. My understanding is you have left Arizona. You're on your way to the Masters. You coming here to Georgia?
I'm already here.
Oh, welcome to Georgia, man. Welcome.
I got to the media center at Augusta National about 2 hours ago. Took the 6 a.m. flight out of Phoenix. And, yeah, I'm here. I got to find, you know, some juice for, like, six more days. And then I go back to Detroit, and I'm going to sleep for, like, a couple weeks. So
have you seen Tiger Woods take two consecutive steps?
Theoretically, they're not what I would consider steps, but he's moving forward.
Okay. All right. So you not too he says if everything is good, he's ready to win. What do you think?
I don't think that's accurate. I don't think so. I would still take Scotty Scheffler.
All right, Brendan. Well, thank you so much for the insight not too far away from me here in Atlanta and Augusta. Hey, Brendan, where can people follow you and all your amazing work with The Athletic?
Yeah, I appreciate you asking. Obviously, I'm there on The Athletic in both a lot of college basketball, a lot of golf. My colleagues did amazing work this week at the Final Four. You also, you know, for people who are really interested about this, the kind of UConn path and how this all happened, I can't recommend my colleague Dana O'Neill's book, The Big East, that was published about 3 years ago. Like, it was a source material for a lot of the stuff that I wrote in that piece, and it's a great, great read. And then I'm on Twitter at BF Quinn.
Hey, Brendan, thank you so much. Safe travels around. Enjoy the Masters. And when you get that rest, get in a few winks from me, okay?
You got it, my man. Thank you so much.
This is Matt Spiegel, and we are off and running with Season 2 of the PBP, Voices of Baseball. The very best play-by-play voices in the game talk about their craft. Hear guests like Joe Davis explain the thought process during baseball's biggest games.
You got to widen the lens. What does this home run mean?
Harper, the swing of his life!
Incredible broadcasters sharing great stories from your favorite teams with new episodes weekly. Find us on the Odyssey app or wherever you find podcasts.